Game on 2FM.
With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
It's Thursday, the 8th of July. Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us for the afternoon. Coming up on Game On tonight, we're live in Oriel Park as the League of Ireland clubs get their European campaigns underway.
Bulger plays it infield. Chance for the shot here. Oh, it's an absolute rocket! An absolute rocket of a goal by David Cawley.
Tony O'Donoghue and Conan Byrne discussed that and the European Championships.
And off goes the Napoli star again. Jinx inside and away from Tielemans. Insigne! World class Lorenzo Insigne. A spellbinding strike.
We speak to Jason Smith as he gets ready for Tokyo.
Away they go. Excellent start by Smith. Nambal alongside. Looks like it's going to be very tight, but it's Jason Smith in the lead here for Ireland. And here comes Jad Paris as well. But Jason Smith has got the 100 metres hat-trick.
Now, Jeff Shepherd will also cast his eye on America. And if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us at 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, England have reached a final of a major tournament for the first time since 1966 after Harry Kane's extra time goal gave them a 2-1 win over Denmark. We're going to be chatting about that in just a little bit. But first, we're going to cross over to Oriel Park where Tony O'Donoghue is watching Dundalk versus Newtown. Tony.
Hi, yeah, we've got 19 minutes on the clock here. It's Dundalk 0, Newtown 0. It's a decent game, actually, yeah, and Dundalk have been impressive, despite the fact, of course, that there was a COVID outbreak among the Dundalk squad, so that certainly hampered their preparations. Initially, four players were ruled out, but Michael Duffy's result was deemed a false positive, and when he was tested again, he was clear. So he starts against the Welsh side, and a Dundalk team that shows two changes from the side that lost 3-1 to Shamrock Rovers. That was last Friday in Tallaght. Daniel Kelly comes into the side for Greg Sloggett, who drops to the bench, and David McMillan replaces Patrick Hooban at centre forward. Hooban doesn't make the bench either. Vinnie Perth back in charge at Oriel Park, of course, 10 months after he was let go. He's vowed to play the Dundalk way with an emphasis on attack, with the fullbacks given licence to raid forward, two wingers either side of McMillan. McMillan, of course, has scored 11 goals in European competition, equal with Glenn Crowe, so he's hoping that tonight he can go clear in the European goal scoring records. Dundalk, after their Europa League exploits last season, they're the seeded team against Newtown, this Welsh club who finished seventh last year in the Cymru Premier League. They themselves have been hit by a COVID outbreak as well and missing four players who were all likely to start. So they actually started quite well, and it looked like James Davis for them might have caused a bit of bother as he headed into the hands of Abebe in the Dundalk goal, but the linesman eventually flagged for offside. The best moment of the game for Dundalk came after 10 minutes with a McElhenney header that the Newtown keeper David Jones got down well to save. And Dundalk have been bossing it in terms of possession and their interplay has been good. But that's the clearest they've come to a goal so far. But it's been lively, there's no doubt about that. And remember, this is a really important game and an important competition. I suppose you could say it's the third tier of European competition now. But participation in this round is worth a guaranteed 250,000. That's for the three Irish clubs in action this evening. Sligo and Bowes, of course, playing in Iceland later. A win is worth an extra 300,000. The third round would bring 850,000. And getting as far as the playoff round is worth 1.15 million. So not to be sneezed at. And if, like Dundalk did last year in the Europa League, if they were to get to the group stage, 2.9 million. So this competition is lucrative, certainly, and hugely important. There's no doubt about that. So here we are with 22 minutes now in the game. We're midway through the first half. Newtown on the attack. But as I say, when Dundalk are in possession, they look confident yet to get on the score sheet, though. But it looks like they may in a game that will, of course, be hugely significant. Not just to Dundalk, but to Vinnie Perth. Remember, he had his European exploits last year, but had his differences or his difficulties with Peak Six, the owners, the American owners of Dundalk, and not long after that he was replaced by Filippo Giovagnoli, and they went on to make it through to the Europa League. So a lot at stake here at Oriel Park, and it's still 0-0.
It sounds as well, Tony, like the fans that are there are in strong voice.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few, and making some noise, and there's a few Welsh people here as well. It's funny looking at the team sheet, and this is a proper Welsh team. They've got Joneses and Roberts and Evanses and Davis and Williams. Could be a rugby team, but playing quite well. Newtown against Dundalk.
Well, Conan Byrne is also on the line. And Conan, Tony mentioned as well that Sligo Rovers and Bowes are both in action, European action tonight as well, and just how lucrative it would be for them to get wins in Europe. But are they up against tough challenges?
Yeah, you could say so, Marie. They're playing against two Icelandic opposition. Sligo are playing FH, who done really, really well last year. Funnily enough, they're not just a football team. They're also a handball team, an athletics team, and a fencing team. So, yeah, their previous manager was one Eider Gudjonsson. So he only left the post there at the end of 2020, and their new manager, Logie Olafsson, took charge at the start of 2021. Most of their players, Marie, are from Iceland, 32 out of the 35 players. But League of Ireland fans may remember one former Dundalk player, ironically enough, Stevie Lennon, who played at Doriel Park in the 2010-2011 season. Being totally honest with you, that they haven't done really well this season. FH, they're struggling a little bit for form, and like with Starion as well, the team that Bowes are facing, they're not on a great run of form either. Two defeats in the last three for them. They've only won three of their opening 12 games, so they're above Sligo's opponents actually, FH, by 1 point. So I wouldn't worry too much about this. Like, Sligo and Bowes are on the crest of a wave domestically at the moment. Obviously, Sligo have COVID cases themselves. Two have come out in the last 24 hours, so that might be disappointing. And the team sheet as well, kind of, if you wouldn't be, you'd know who they were, put it that way. That if you followed Sligo over the last number of months, but they're going to miss Ed McGuinty in goal. He got injured last week, and Luke McNicholas has come in for his first European start, so it'll be a big night for him, I'm sure, between the sticks. So yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. As I said, Bowes, one loss in seven. They're just a big blip, obviously, to Sligo. Georgie Kelly as well, SSE Electricity League player of the month for June, so he was absolutely superb. 12 league goals as well, so he's in flying form. So it's going to be very, very interesting over the next couple of hours, Marie.
Yeah, it sure will. And Tony will keep us updated throughout this hour anyway from Dundalk. Tony, you had a very thought-provoking piece on the television last night about whether or not we should feel okay supporting England. And you definitely, there was a lot of debate after it as well. But it was interesting. And look, you must have probably seen it over the years, just fans' opinions evolving as we got more comfortable, really, with our next-door neighbours.
Well, I think it was well worth posing the question, don't you? And yeah, it was thought-provoking, I hope, but it certainly provoked something of a visceral reaction as well, which I suppose I probably expected too, because, you know, I have no problem with England being the enemy or the old enemy in a sporting context, and I have no problem with us wanting, you know, maybe to do well when we're up against them. But I wanted to make the point that I think this England team and the individuals involved, Southgate, and the way they've conducted themselves and the way they've managed themselves, you know, they have broken the mold in many ways. And, you know, there's no one can, you know, see the England fans and sometimes their behaviour, particularly abroad, that can't be in any way condoned. But you have to, you know, make the difference between what you're seeing on the pitch versus sometimes what you see on the terraces. Now, you know, the incident last night with the laser being shone in Kasper Schmeichel's face, that's just disgraceful. But that doesn't take away from the point that, you know, there's a lot of good things happening in England, in English football at the moment. And I just think it's great that they've got the courage of their convictions, standing up to the Tory government at times and doing what's right. And I think that was worth reflecting. And I think also, look, this is complicated. Of course it is. But we have an amazing relationship with England. I mean, you know, the music, the culture, the football. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of our lives. And there's a chance here for David McMillan, and the referee is, after calling that off for an offside situation, Daniel Kelly getting an opportunity there Sorry, it's hard to talk about last night when I'm trying to watch this because, yeah.
Jobbing, Tony.
No, yeah, but like, you know, we love football and we're connected to football in so many ways. And, you know, my first team will always be Cork City, but I've always been a Tottenham Hotspur fan as well. And I have no problem with the way those two things can coexist. And, you know, you don't have to be one thing or the other. You can love both.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was definitely very well put in your piece last night and got a lot of people thinking about things that they might not have before, and a lot of them were the social issues and the just the way that the English footballers have conducted themselves over the last while. Conan, they do feel like a much more relatable bunch of players maybe than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I think so, Marie. And sure, look at the work Marcus Rashford has done. I know he hasn't got much game time over the last number of games for the English national team, but just look at the work that he has done and how much he's changed people's lives, and especially in the northwest of England, you know. And it's incredible, really. Like footballers have a lot of time in their hands, but they don't use it. I've always said that they don't use it wisely enough. But with Marcus Rashford and the likes of Raheem Sterling as well, the amount of work that they do in their communities is absolutely fascinating. And even take Gareth Southgate, for example. Like, 1996, he was called every name under the sun by the English themselves over missing that penalty against Germany in the semi-final. And to go back now as manager and bring the nation into a final to their first final since 1966, it's just, can you imagine just what Gareth Southgate is feeling right now? And I'm delighted for him, because even at the final whistle, there was none of this kind of gloating to the crowd or anything like that. He was very reserved in the win, went straight over to the Danish manager and utmost respect. And yeah, I'm not thrilled that England are in the final now, but for the individuals that are involved in it, they deserve it for all that they've done.
Yeah, and Tony, they did it the hard way as well last night. Like, they did go behind and have to go on and win the game, and that was one of the questions posed before kickoff last night, was whether they would be able to do that. But I suppose it's just another string to their bow now.
Well, the fact that they finally conceded, it was the first goal they've conceded in the whole tournament so far, and you'd wonder. And when there have been questions raised about Pickford, he's made some great saves throughout the tournament, and I don't think he could have saved that Danish free kick. It was a thing of beauty, there's no doubt about that. But yeah, they did show character. That asked questions of them, because, you know, even though they're at home, sometimes that can put even more pressure on you. And when you go behind, sometimes the crowd can get on your back. I just think it's interesting as well, Conan referring to 96 and the way Gareth Southgate was projected in the media. Like, you know, we're working in the media, so I suppose, you know, we can't have it every way. But sometimes you could nearly say the tabloidization of football around that time as well. Since Italia 90, you know, football became hugely popular in the UK again, you know, across all strata of society. And everything became, you know, I suppose, overblown. And, you know, some of those headlines can be, you know, I think tabloid writing can be some of the best writing, but some of those headlines were funny at times, but sometimes they became, you could nearly say, abusive. And the pressure that put players under, and the likes of Gareth Southgate, you know, that could have had a huge effect on him for the rest of his life. But I think it's to his great credit that he survived that. No, they made a lot of money out of it as well. Stuart Pearce doing pizza ads, etc. You know, but sometimes we do look at sport in a media sense, in a cartoonish sort of way, and maybe we need to look at it in a deeper way. And some places do, of course. But I wouldn't take the jingoism of the British media as the only yardstick by which we should measure the success or otherwise of the English football team.
Yeah, that's for sure. And Conan, another incident that has raised quite a lot of debate is Raheem Sterling's dive, or alleged dive, or potential dive. What are your thoughts on it?
Look, last night I would have said straight away it was a dive, being totally honest, Marie. But on reflection and kind of looking at various angles, that I don't know if the VAR officials actually got all the angles in that time. Because when the incident happened, it seemed that the call was made very, very quickly, considering, like, in Premier League matches, they can take 2-3 minutes to make a call. So I thought, first and foremost, that it was a very, very quick decision. But VAR is there for a clear and obvious error by the referee. And in my opinion, it's not a clear and obvious error. There was contact, and although minimal, the referee isn't wrong in giving it, because there was contact in the box, and he went down. And look, I'll bring it into my own game. If I was ever driving into the box and a player hit me and I didn't go down, I stayed up, I'd get the wrath of every single member of my team at halftime or full-time that I didn't go down and hit the deck. And it's just that's just the way football is, unfortunately, at the moment. And if Sterling didn't go down there and they didn't get a penalty and they lost, can you imagine what the tabloids would be saying about Raheem Sterling now? So, look, I wouldn't be as critical as I would have been last night on Raheem. As I said, he felt the contact. He spoke to George Hamilton after the game, and I loved the way he said, "Look, referee gave it, VAR gave it, so there was contact with myself, so it's a penalty." And that would be my take on it. And I don't know whether that's right or wrong.
Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, what Conan says is very interesting from a player's point of view. And remember, Duffer in the RT studios recently said something like that as well. I wonder who is he referring to. One of his managers would have absolutely killed him if he hadn't gone down. I'd say that man might have been Jose Mourinho. Because it's a professional game. It shouldn't excuse cheating. But was it cheating? I mean, you know, we know that Sterling is a flyer. He has had a terrific tournament and a very, very good game last night. He's a low centre of gravity. And if you're going at that speed, and if you're leaning over, any contact at all is likely to lead to you losing your stride. And whether he did that on purpose or whether his stride was affected, there was some contact. I mean, he's right to say that, and I've seen those angles today as well that Conan is referring to. There was some contact. I would have felt it was harsh last night as well. But having said that, I think it was a penalty. Interestingly, the penalty was then saved. Oh, goal for Dundalk, yeah. We've finally got on the score sheet. The goal
timing,
coming
Tony.
From Michael Duffy. A good run down the right-hand side, the inside right channel. Ball crossed into the area. And Michael Duffy bundles the ball home on the 33rd minute of the game. So Michael Duffy, as you can see, I'm fighting with the other Michael Duffy, the famous PA announcer here at Oriel Park. He's pretty loud, but they'll be happy with that. Dundalk leading by a goal to nil against Newtown in the UEFA Europa Conference League.
Fantastic stuff, Tony, and great to have you on air as well, multitasking there as it goes in. And just Conan, a word on Harry Kane as well, because you know, we're talking about things that feeling that they people have been proving other people wrong, and Harry Kane seems like one of those as well. For a while there were calls for him to be dropped.
Yeah, look, it's the kind of tail of two halves of the European Championships, isn't it? Like, I was actually just looking at today about Immobile, the Italian striker, and Kane. Immobile was brilliant at the start of this tournament. He was scoring in the group stages and hasn't scored since, whereas Kane didn't score in the group stages and has scored in every game since in the quarterfinal and semi-final. So, coming into the final, I think if you're the tail of the two strikers, you'd fancy Kane to get on the score sheet on Sunday. And it's look, you can never write a player like Harry Kane off. He's done it throughout his whole career. When he went out on loan at Leighton Orient all those years ago, and then coming into the Spurs setup, there was talk that he got in through a bit of luck, through a bit of injury, but he held his place, kept scoring goals, and that's what Harry Kane does. And he's adapted his game so well as well. He can play in a number of positions. And what I loved about Harry Kane last night in terms of his selflessness for the team, because they could have went and tried to get a third, but the way he handled the game, going into the corners, strength, just so showed great leadership as a captain. And again, in his post-match interviews, he was just very, very humble as well in victory. And yeah, delighted for Harry Kane, and I'm sure Tony is as well, considering he's a Spurs man, but maybe not for too long, Marie.
Will he be going up to Mayo? Is that where he's from, Tony, again?
No, it's Letter Frack in Connemara. That's I remember going there in 2018, yeah, and he used to go there every summer. I think that was only until about 6 years ago. Obviously, he's been playing in tournaments a lot of summers, or he's just gone into the stratosphere of strikers. He may be the best striker in the world at the moment. Lewandowski might have something to say about that, I suppose, but in terms of number nine, he comes deep, doesn't he, and he gets involved in the play further up the pitch, and then as well he's there quite often in just tucking the ball home. So yeah, he's improving. I do wonder though, as I was saying, if they had gone behind, that they did go behind last night, and what questions it asked of them, I think they'll be under intense pressure as the home side. It has been built up so much, haven't been in a final since 66. It is at Wembley. And I just get a feeling that Italy, you know, since the opening bars of their anthem in Rome, the opening game of the entire tournament, and they've been up for it. And, you know, They've gone unbeaten for so long now. Mancini really seems to have them well drilled. Brilliant camaraderie and team spirit in that group. They're probably tired, but they've had an extra day as well. I think the pressure's on England now, and how they deal with it on Sunday will be very interesting.
Yeah, Conan, they have been, Italy have been so impressive, and they've garnered a lot of fans as well along the way, I think.
They have, and I think they've got a lot of Irish fans as well over the last number of days as well. But I think that, look, I think they were lucky the other night against Spain. I thought Spain were left to rue 2 to 3 gilt-edged chances by Isarabel. Maybe 3, actually, after the one that he nearly put out of the ground. But I think England's forwards wouldn't have missed those. And I think it's going to be the tale of both attacking ends, because if you have the likes of Kane and Sterling against Immobile and Insigne as well, so it's going to be an excellent game in terms of the attacking ends. And then defensively as well, I think John Stones has been completely underrated in this tournament. I think he's been underrated all season, if you ask me. I think he's been absolutely superb, considering all the stick he's been getting maybe in 2018, 2019. I know Harry Maguire alongside him has done very, very well as well. And then the two monsters in Italy, Bonucci and Chiellini. So it's going to be a fascinating final. Really, really looking forward to it. But Forza Italia, Marie.
Right, that's your prediction then.
Yeah.
Tony, what's yours?
Ooh, it's going to be tough. I do think that pressure is going to tell on England. And I think we could have extra time and penalties in this one as well. I really do. And then we'll see who's going to be able to stand up to it. It's going to be tight. I think I might go for Italy this time.
Oh, why not? Pizza all round on Sunday night. Conan, Tony, thanks so much for joining me. Tony, we'll check in with you a little bit later on. We're going to cross over now to Michael Corcoran, who has news on the British and Irish lines. Michael, they're going to meet the Sharks for a second time in 4 days after the Bulls were...
It's the second meeting of the teams, Marie. They're the ones who stepped into the breach to cover it off because of the fact that they didn't have a game. They obviously needed a match in terms of preparations for the forthcoming test series. That's what it's all about. And Ben Calverley, who's the managing director of the British and Irish Lions, has said over the course of yesterday and indeed today that they will do whatever is necessary to protect the integrity of the three test games. And that's exactly what they're doing here now with the Sharks, providing opposition for the second time in the space of 4 days. I feel sorry for them because they were well beaten in the game last night, and you know, because they're in a protective bubble, they can't bring in any additional players, the Sharks that is, but it does look given the fact that the PCR tests are coming back negative from a Lions point of view, that they will have some additional players available for the game on Saturday, but that match is to be confirmed pending the outcome of obviously the further testing that the Lions have done today, and just awaiting results for that.
And just in terms of the tour itself, look, obviously it is going ahead. It's not going ahead the way that anyone would like it to, but the games are still getting played. How big an impact do you think this next few days, or the incidents over the last few days, are going to have on whether or not this is seen through, Michael?
Well, just for context, the situation is that the early part of the tour was always going to be the tricky bit because it's in the Gauteng province, which hosts Johannesburg and Pretoria, and that's the most densely populated part of South Africa. It's also the part that's hit most by COVID. So if they could negotiate and get through, you know, this section of the tour, moving down to Cape Town on Sunday, which is, you know, somewhere in the region of 1,400 to 1,500 kilometres away. Just to put that into context, Dublin to London is 600 kilometres. Dublin to Munich is the same distance. So it's like having a big outbreak in Munich and moving from there to Dublin. So that's the distance between Johannesburg and Cape Town. The situation in the Western Cape, from my contacts there, they tell me that COVID is not as rampant, for want of a better phrase, as it is in the Gauteng province. So the situation there is they're coping with everything from a COVID point of view there. So once they get through this weekend, I would be quite happy and quite confident that the tour will continue. Certainly it will have some challenges, but it does look as if they will move everything south to Cape Town after this weekend. But there's obviously some negotiation going on because the final two test matches were supposed to be in Johannesburg. But I think what will happen is you'll probably find that everything will move literally lock, stock and barrel down to Cape Town. And that's where they'll be based for the next 3 weeks after this weekend.
And Michael, it's also been reported today that not all of the touring party, the Lions touring party, have got their double vaccination, which is quite a worrying situation for them to be in.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's that's the situation that they're in. I mean, there's, you know, 37 players plus probably around the same again in terms of support staff and everything like that. I'm sure, like, if there is a sort of a positive to come out of what's happened with the COVID scares over the last number of days with the Lions and indeed with the Springboks, it's that, you know, these outbreaks have happened now rather than closer to when the tests are supposed to be, basically. I mean, that, you know, the first test is this Saturday, 2 weeks from then. So it does give them time to kind of get their house in order fully and get everything sorted out. So obviously lessons will have been learned or will have been learned. Ben Calverley did say that, you know, the staff who are working in the hotel were there staying in Johannesburg, the Monte Cassino Resort in Johannesburg at the moment. Even the staff who are working there at this moment in time haven't actually gone home, you know, to return to their own accommodation. They're on site full time with the Lions. They haven't been allowed leave and everybody's been PCR tested all of the time. So, like, I mean, they're taking every literally precaution that they can. Certainly, you know, the good news is that the player who tested positive yesterday, everybody was retested, and all of the tests, including the player who was tested positive yesterday, has come back negative. So, you know, that's pretty positive news, because it means then that provided they come clear again from the testing today, it means that that player plus all of his contacts will go into the kind of player pool, for want of a better phrase, mm-hmm. in terms of getting ready for the game on Saturday.
So they have already beaten beaten the Sharks, and quite convincingly, yeah. as well, 54-7. So did Warren Gatland learn much from that game?
I'm not sure that the games are going to be, you know, given the challenge of the pandemic and COVID. I'm not sure he's looking to sort of learn an awful lot, or he is going to learn an awful lot from the actual matches. You know, I think it's trying to manage the minutes going into the legs of the players, basically, ahead of the test series coming up. I mean, the match midweek next week in Cape Town against South Africa A is probably a game that he'll have a strong eye on, that one. And indeed, the match the following Saturday against the Stormers, also in Cape Town. They're the two games, really, I think, that he will pay closer attention to in terms of his selection for the first test the following week in Cape Town. So I think, you know, we're in a situation now where a lot of players, you know, haven't maybe played for a period of time. And they've had to do a bit of juggling and everything like that with the rescheduling of the opposition and everything. So it's just a matter of trying to manage game minutes for players at the moment. But I think once they hit Cape Town, everything takes off in terms of match preparation for that first test, given the fact that they're only, you know, what, they'll be 2 weeks out from the first test at the Cape Town Stadium.
There's a lot of rugby at the moment, actually, Michael, because Ireland are playing as well at the weekend on Saturday evening against the USA. And Andy Farrell named his team today, 8 uncapped players in line for their international debuts.
Yeah, it's kind of slightly unusual, to be fair. I mean, there are 4 uncapped players in the starting team, all from Ulster: Robert Balakoon, James Hume, Tom O'Toole and Nick Timoney. 4 other fellas to come off the bench: Finian Witchley, Paul Boyle, Caelan Blade and Harry Byrne. You know, it's a good opportunity to see them at international level. You know, and given the fact that the USA were really good, particularly in the last 20, 25 minutes against England and Twickenham last Sunday, it's a big test for them. I mean, individually, all of the players who are starting and the fellows coming off the bench are there on merit. I mean, James Hume has played alongside Stuart McCluskey probably throughout the course of the season for Ulster and has really, really impressed. He's a really good player. Robert Balakoon actually came through the sevens system. You know, and only for him turning to the 15-a-side game could very well be going to Tokyo for the Olympic Games. Tom O'Toole has been with Ulster for a couple of years. He did a lot of his growing up in Australia, in Brisbane, and did quite well in the school system over there. Born in Ireland, and like again, he's there on merit. And Nick Timoney has been absolutely brilliant since his move from Leinster to Ulster. So I mean, he can. The good thing about Nick is he can play seven or eight. Caelan Doris shunting to six on this occasion, which gives Gavin Coombs and Skibbereen a chance to start probably in his favoured position of number eight. So it's quite an exciting team. Hugo Keenan going for the 13th international game in a row, so and James Ryan in the second row with Ryan Baird. So it's quite an exciting team, and there's quite a lot of excitement in terms of the players that I've mentioned already, particularly on cap ones, to come off the bench at some stage against the USA.
Yeah, and I think it'd be nice to see Craig Casey and Joey Carberry there as well. A lot of people
absolutely
have been calling
for
game time for Craig.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fantastic thing about it. I think, you know, given the fact that, you know, they haven't had an awful lot of time to prepare together as a team, I mean, you can see the combinations there. I mean, the Hugh McCluskey one is one, the Craig Casey, Joey Carberry one. You know, it's incredible actually to see Joey Carberry in the midst of all of those players there, and with the exception of Andrew Conway, and it's terrific to see him back. You know, with Joey Carberry there, he's the most capped of the backs, which is kind of bizarre, really, to be fair about it. So that's how lacking in experience. I think Dave Kilcoyne actually in the front row is the most capped player from an Ireland point of view. But it's great to see Craig Casey starting. I think he's a tremendous, tremendous player. You know, we didn't see too much of him last week, but it will be brilliant to see how he gets on. You know, for what is he, 5 foot five, 5 foot six, but he really bosses everybody around the place. And I think just his combination with Joey Carberry will be brilliant. And again, I'm looking forward to see Caelan Blade. It'll be fantastic to see Caelan Blade come off the bench and make his debut for Ireland at some stage.
It really will. Michael Corcoran, as always, thank you so much for joining me.
No worries, thank you.
Now we're going to head for a break, but first an update from the Dundalk Newtown game. David McMillan has made it 2-0, adding to Michael Duffy's earlier goal. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. I'm delighted to say that we are joined on the line by five-time Paralympic gold medalist Jason Smith. Jason, we are edging towards the Olympics. The last time we had you on, we weren't so sure whether it was going to go ahead, but it's definitely full steam ahead now. How are you fixed?
Yeah, things are going well, obviously. As you say, there's no time away. For us, the Olympics going first, and just literally we're straight in after. So it's hard to believe. It is, as you say, a year ago that we were discussing the ifs, buts and maybes, and now we're on the doorstep of it happening. So
yeah, it feels quite surreal for me, so I can only imagine what it feels like for you, the fact that you were the one preparing for it.
Yeah, again, it's obviously not just people preparing for the games, but the last year for everybody has been strange and different and challenging. And it's just really learning to adapt and be flexible and find new ways to try do what you've always done. So I think that's what's going to be quite telling when we get to the summer, is how people have adapted with these strange times.
Yeah, and you've prepared for quite a few games at this stage. Are things really different for you just in terms of what you're doing, or is it just stick to what you know well?
Things have been different. Again, depending on your sport and depending on where you're based. Like for me, I'd spend a lot of my winter time abroad in warmer climates. Warmer climates are quite important for the sprinters, just being able to work and operate at that intensity. So obviously that's one thing that has changed significantly from previous years. But like, there's not one way in my instance to run fast. There's a number of different ways, and it's about, as I say, it's about learning to find those other ways and go about it in a slightly different way. So I mean, I'm confident with where I'm at and how things have moved along, and hopefully that shows towards the end of next month.
Yeah. So what's your plans then for the next few weeks to get up to the speed or to be as ready as you can be?
yeah, at this stage, really, a lot of the work is done, and it's really about trying to fine-tune things. So I compete on Saturday, and then I am away on camp on Sunday for 2 weeks, which is in Spain. So that's kind of really where I start to really fine-tune and sharpen up a little bit more. And then I am back for about 2 weeks. I'll have a few races. And then we're, I think, supposed to be going in around the 12th of August. So, and then from there, obviously, into the holding camp and then into the village. So it'll be quick over the next number of weeks of how time passes, and all of a sudden we'll be at the games. And believe it or not, before we know it, we'll be past the games.
And God only knows what will be happening then when they're all over. But one thing that's for sure, I think from watching any sport that has been on, particularly the Euros, sport has brought a lot of joy to people when they need it as well. So I think that the Olympics, especially with what's going on with the Delta variant, so to have the Olympics and the Paralympics coming up afterwards, it will be nice to have that distraction and to have a different focus.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's, you say it's distraction. It's a very, very positive distraction. So I think it is an opportunity for people to really get behind it more than sometimes other years, just because of the fact of often, I think one of the things with this whole year and a half is sometimes we get so caught in our lives and busyness and running here and running there. And I don't know for everybody else, but this last year's give a bit of time to stop and think and reflect and maybe not get so caught up in everything. And I think the Games is a good opportunity to obviously support Irish athletes, and hopefully that can start with a good bit of success at the Olympics, which would lead nicely into the Paralympics.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it was announced today, Jason, that unfortunately venues in Tokyo will not be able to admit spectators for this summer's games because of the coronavirus pandemic. It has forced a declaration of a new state of emergency in Tokyo. How do you feel about, I guess, the fact that everything is still kind of moving and it's very hard to get clarity really on the situation over there?
I think as athletes, the only thing you can do is focus on you and what you can control, and that's regardless if we've got, you know, what the current environment and COVID, and if we've got spectators or not. The only thing you can control is what you do and how you prepare and how you perform, and for all athletes, that's really, you know, where you should be thinking and focusing, because if we have spectators, fabulous. If not, well, it doesn't change. You've still got to go and perform. So it's about getting that right, and sometimes it's just about forgetting all the noise that goes around these games. And you know, it's not just these games. There's some noise, there's some media hype about something in the lead up to every games. You know, I think of Beijing, we heard about smog and the pollution, and Rio, we hear about the Zika virus. So there's always something going on. It's about blocking out all that noise and just focusing on what you need to do.
Yeah, and it is coming very, very quickly, which I think we're all happy that it's definitely happening anyway. Jason Smith, thank you so much for joining me, and I will be looking forward to seeing you over the next couple of months. And Jason was speaking at the launch of the second video in the Alliance's Courage Chronicles series. Earlier this year, Alliance announced an 8-year worldwide partnership with the Olympic and Paralympic movements, building on a global collaboration with the Paralympic movement since 2006. And information on that can be found on alliance.com. Now back to Tony O'Donoghue at Oriel Park. Tony.
Yeah, the team's about to come out for the second half, and Dundalk are leading by 2-0 and look comfortable. I'm sure that they'll want to add to those in the second half, because Newtown, like Dundalk, had a COVID outbreak as well and are missing players. But Dundalk look a class above them, I'd have to say. The opening goal coming after 33 minutes. And remember I was saying that Vinnie Perth wanted to play the Dundalk way, and he's had the courage of his convictions. He talked about the fullbacks getting forward and the wingers. Well, Daniel Kelly on the right and Michael Duffy on the left combined for that opening goal. Kelly's cross terrifically met at the back stick by Michael Duffy. No more than Dundalk deserved. McElhenney had a header before that the Newtown keeper David Jones got down to save well, but just before half time, and David McMillan, who else of course, added a second. Duffy involved in the build up, he released Darragh Leahy down the left hand side. His cross was met by the head of McMillan, and that's his 12th goal in Europe. That means he goes ahead of Glenn Crowe as the all time leading Irish goal scorer in European competition. So well done to McMillan. And remember, Pat Hooban out, one of the players missing today for Dundalk. So McMillan may not even have started but for that. But he's on the score sheet. Dundalk lead by 2-0. And to be honest with you, it looks like there could be more goals in them as well. I'm sure Vinnie Pert would be saying that to them. He was rushing them in to the far dressing room at half time. I think they could wrap this up with another couple of goals and not have to worry too much about the second leg. Remember, they were already guaranteed, both sides, 250,000. A win tonight worth an extra a win in the tie is worth an extra 300,000, and the third round worth 850,000. So not to be sneezed at whatsoever. Second half just about to begin. Dundalk leading by 2-0.
Thanks, Tony. It does sound like they're well on their way. Right, we're going to take a very quick break, and then we're back with Paul Sterling.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on 2FM.
Now it's time to turn our attention to cricket. Next Sunday sees the start of the men's home internationals. The first series is against South Africa, and I'm delighted to be joined by Irish cricketer Paul Sterling. Paul, how are things?
Hi, how are you doing? Nice to be on. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So you have some very important games coming up starting on Sunday. How have preparations been going?
Yeah, not too bad. We've played a few domestic games in our inter-provincial series over the last month. It's just nice to get back together as a national squad, hopefully practicing hard and putting in some good yards for the series to come.
Yeah, and hopefully some nice weather, because a lot of rain has fallen over the last few days, which often coincides with really important events.
It often does, doesn't it? And from a batsman's point of view, the less rain the better. Hopefully some good pitches and some runs to be scored.
Yeah, I think it is going to improve over the weekend, all right, which would be great. And then hopefully over the next month or so, it will stay dry anyway. So just when you look ahead to these games, how important is it to get some results? Obviously, South Africa will be quite difficult, but just to start building some momentum.
I think that's right, yeah. I think we've been chatting as a team over the last year or two, and we've been rebuilding. It's a young team with a little bit of experience at the top end, and then not much games in between. So we're certainly looking to put on a good performance the next few weeks. And certainly, so as you said, South Africa is going to be a tough challenge. They have a brilliant team, and they're coming straight from the West Indies to cover sort of two tours in one. So they've got a full-strength squad coming. And hopefully we can bring a bit of confidence knowing that we can turn sides over. It's just getting that consistency right. And instead of just having one-off wins, which we've been lucky enough to get in the last number of years, hopefully we can put in a number of better performances as we go.
I guess when you do have those one-off wins, you know what you can do, but then come a couple of disappointing results, so it's probably hard to kind of keep that confidence. What areas do you think that you need to work on just to get the consistency, so they aren't, or that you turn those one-off wins into consistent performances and results?
Yeah, I think it's just keeping very basic, getting the basics right, doing them well. I think we usually play our best cricket when we're as a team for a long time. When we go away in winter tours in particular, we're with each other for 6-7 weeks at a time. And I think we're training every day. We have great facilities. We're always together chatting about cricket. And it helps. It sort of gets you into that mindset where when we play our home games, you know, you're waiting for the touring side to come over, and you get less time as a group. So we've got to try and work out how best we're going to improve from that situation and try and get that feel as if we're away as a collective. So I think that's what we've got to try and do to improve is maybe have a little bit more sessions as a national squad instead of our regional squad. So I think we've got that soft for the next few weeks and leading into quite a busy international summer. So hopefully we've got that area ticked off this time.
So Kevin O'Brien, he announced his retirement from One Day International Cricket recently. What do you think his legacy will be now that he's gone?
Well, I think to start with, he's had such a great career. I think it's spanned over maybe 15 years in the ODI circuit. So certainly from my point of view, I remember his knocks are the first ones that come to mind. Watching him in Bangalore against England, obviously he's the first one that comes. He's just been such a brilliant servant, and hopefully he's got a lot more to give in the other two formats. So probably time to celebrate what's been a great career in ODI cricket with him, and then hopefully there's plenty more knocks from him to come.
Yeah, I can't imagine him retiring fully anytime soon. Anyway, and just for yourself, I know that a lot of what you do takes you away, and you know, international travel has been such a big part of any cricketer's life. What is the last, God, how many months is it now? It's well over a year anyway. What's it been like for you? And just, you know, has it curtailed your career or what you've wanted to do in any sort of way?
That's a good question. I think from a personal point of view, I think it's just actually off the field that curtails more. I don't think you can get away from the game as much as you'd want to. So it's always consistently thinking about cricket or training or what you can't do. So I think from an actual cricket point of view, the playing and the training, it's not been too bad, because you want to play international, and you want to be away and touring all the time. It's just outside of that, there's no, you know, international travel for holiday or get away from the game. I think that's equally as important as the matches. You know, the intensity, you can't keep the intensity up all year round, and you need that off time. So I think that's probably the most difficult part from my point of view anyway. I think other people maybe are slightly different, but
I know that you mentioned that you're playing interprovincial. How did that series go for you?
Yeah, I think it's the first time I think we've had four teams in the setup instead of three. I think it works pretty well. We've tried to share the talent around all four teams instead of, it's been pretty much dominated by Leinster over the last sort of, say, decade. I think they've started placing players across the whole of the country to even up the talent. So I think that's worked this year. I think any team can beat anyone, which is great and good for the competition. So hopefully that continues over the next few years, and hopefully we can continue to improve. That's the main thing.
That's the funny thing about the pandemic. People have stumbled onto formats or solutions or doing things that end up working that they might not have tried before the pandemic. But yeah, hopefully that will keep going for you. So just let's look ahead to the summer, because it is going to be a really busy international summer for you guys. What are you looking forward to most?
I think just playing cricket back on the island. I think we haven't played, I think we missed a whole summer last year and haven't played here since the pandemic began. So to play in front of our home crowd, I think we can maybe get just over 500 in coming up, and then maybe a few more as we get to the Belfast and Londonderry leg in the future. So hopefully just that. I think it's an excitement when you're playing in front of your own fans. So I think it's also one step at a time. The old cliche, I think we can't look too far ahead. We've got South Africa on Sunday, and they're important games for us. But if we look too far ahead, then we might take our eye off these ones. So one step at a time, and it is a really busy summer. I was just looking up the fixture list this morning, actually, and you know, it's from here until maybe November, mid-November. It's hectic, so this will be the start of it come this week.
Well, one game at a time does seem like a very, very good approach. Paul, thanks so much for joining me, and I'm sure we'll be catching up with you throughout the summer, and best of luck on Sunday and all the upcoming games.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot for having me.
2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now let's cast our eye to American sport with Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, how are things? It's busy over there. It's game two of the NBA Finals tonight.
That's right, Marie. Yeah, so we've got Phoenix in Milwaukee, or as we learned in Wayne's World, it's Milwaukee, an Algonquin for the good land. The Bucks and the Suns playing game two tonight. Chris Paul had a monster game one on Tuesday night. He had 32 points and 9 assists. It's his first game in the finals of his career, and it's the best finals debut appearance since Michael Jordan in 1991. So that tells you what kind of performance he had. They won 118 to 105, and they're going to look to go try to make it two in a row to start the series tonight. And the Suns have been great. It's their first time in the playoffs since 2010, their first time in the finals since they lost to Jordan's Bulls in 93. And so they're trying to make up for some lost time.
Now, speaking of last time, we might as well ask our usual Thursday question. Is Aaron Rodgers going to be back training anytime soon?
I mean, it's like an American soap opera, right? So the answer is, we don't know. He was playing at a golf event this week with Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau. And of course, the question came up. You know, they showed, there was the course was in Montana, a state out west, and they showed a bear near the golf course. And the question was, hey, Aaron, who's going to be playing quarterback for the Packers against the Bears? And he said, nah, we'll see. And then they asked him, what about September 12th, which is the opening game for the Packers? And he was like, what's on September 12th? Like, just doesn't care, you know? And he said, oh, we'll see. And we just don't know what he's going to do yet. Training camp starts here at the end of July, and we just don't know if he's going to show up. And if he doesn't show up, will he play, you know, in the season at all, or will it be Jordan Love who is his backup? We don't have any answers, but it's the ongoing question of the summer right now, Marie.
Well, I will ask you again next week. Jeff Shepherd, thank you so much for joining me. I'm going to go back to Tony O'Donoghue, who's at Oriel Park. Tony.
Yeah, just an hour gone in this game. Dundalk still lead by 2-0, but they can thank their goalkeeper, Alessio Abebe, for maintaining that 2-goal advantage. The Dundalk defence looking a bit shaky, and twice he saved from close range. 2-0 to Dundalk, an hour gone.
Okay, Tony O'Donoghue, thank you so much. We will catch up with you very, very shortly again. Now, we have to go because Tara Stewart is up next.
Live across the nation, this is RTE 2FM.